This is Amy Poehler. My new movie, Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, is coming to theaters June 14th, and it's making me feel joy and sadness and anger, definitely some disgust,
Rose,
and I think a little fear.
Really?
But I'm also feeling these new emotions like anxiety, embarrassment, envy, and ennui.
It's what you call the boredom.
Okay, that one was weird. It's going to be the feel-everything movie of the summer. Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, only in theaters June 14th. Get tickets now.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special.
World class. Jim Crockett Promotions. Big time wrestling. Mid-South. $2 late fee presents Territory Marks with Paul London and Zach Schaefer. The show that celebrates matches from the glory days of professional wrestling. From one man who lives it and another man who loves it.
Russell and Dave Brown, and we're right along ringside all ready to kick it off for another big day.
We're back with another exciting episode of Territory Marks. And I think, would you say, Paul, this is safe to assume that this episode could be titled one of the most brutal episodes ever, just most comedic perhaps too.
Yeah, violent.
Violence.
Just, drag them out, fights. We're making it personal stuff.
Oh yeah, there we go. How about making it personal, Territory Mark style?
Absolutely. Yeah. No, this is we picked some nice rough and tumbles.
We did. You picked a Terry Funk versus Jerry Lawler match for this week, and I picked a Magnum TA versus Nikita Koloff match for this week. We'll get into mine after yours, because yours dates back all the way to 1981, but there's a little twist, right? Because you chose one match, but then you kind of realize, well, there's a great promo involved, and then there's a follow-up match to it, and they all kind of tie together really nicely in a package, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, because they're all within a month of each other. The first match that we'd love to go over and talk about is a very, very popular but I think often overlooked match, just because unless you lived in Memphis, when people think of Memphis wrestling, they think of Jerry the King Lawler, who is the king of Memphis, besides Elvis. But they tend to get drawn more so to what would occur in Memphis roughly like a year later, with Andy Kaufman coming into the territory and starting this big feud with Jerry Lawler. So when people think of Memphis wrestling, obviously they think of Lawler, but they'll more often than not think of Kaufman. So yeah, we're going a year prior to that. Specifically, the date on this first match is March 23rd of 1981.
You're coming to the ring, a former NWA World Heavyweight Champion, attention ladies. He was Frankie the Bumper in Paradise Alley and is now pursuing a career in movies. Retired in time at his ranch in Texas. Entering the ring, Terry Funk.
Now, this is the no DQ match between Jerry Lawler and Terry Funk. And Jimmy Hart, which you'll see, he is kind of under the ring for half of the match, comes out. He's the ultimate opportunist. But Jimmy Hart is from Jackson, Mississippi. And I've met Jimmy Hart and Jerry Lawler and Terry Funk. Obviously, Terry Funk is one of my mentors who's helped me tremendously in my career. But Jimmy Hart was brought into Memphis by Lawler to be, a backup singer. Lawler was, I can't remember the project Lawler was singing, but he eventually became kind of his manager, and then they split off. But they knew of each other because they went to the same high school in Memphis.
Really?
They didn't go at the same time from what I've read, but they attended the same high school.
Wow.
So once Jimmy Hart disbanded and I think he turned on Lawler somewhere in there, and then he soon after formed the First Family, he had brought in Terry Funk as a hired gun to take out Lawler. Now, Lawler and Funk had a match that went 60 minutes. It was an hour Broadway match, and I want to say it was from 78. It might have been 77. So knowing that we're kind of mostly covering 80s and early 90s, I thought, that would be really epic to cover that hour-long Broadway, but it's in the late 70s.
We can still do that.
And we might down the road, you know?
Yeah, my favorite movie is The Warriors of All Time. It's 79, so I say toe-dipping into the 70s is totally acceptable. It's our show. We can do whatever we want.
Come out and play, yay.
That's right.
They went an hour, and, wow. You know, they had a crazy brawl, and from what I gathered, they hadn't really touched since. So when Jimmy Hart brought in Terry Funk as kind of this hired assassin to take out Lawler once and for all, it kind of boiled up into this no DQ match. And so Jimmy Hart is hiding under the ring for half the match. He definitely gets involved throughout the match, but it's not one to marvel at from a technical sense, you know, where you're sitting here, you know. And I think that's something that was really wonderful about Memphis wrestling was, I mean, Mid-South Coliseum, say what you will, it's easily one of the most storied buildings in professional wrestling history. And it seated 11,300 people. And I know that because we'll cover that in the follow-up match, which took place roughly a month after this one. So, but it starts off just wily. It's like you were saying earlier, it's a brawl. They're just going at it. You know, there's no feeling out process.
Nope. Brutal.
Yeah. It's brutal. It's brutal. Absolutely. And, you know, very early on we see, Terry throwing, Lawler out of the ring and all over the place, but even around that point is when we see, you know, Terry gets opened up pretty bad from Lawler slamming his head into the ring bell. So Funk gets a lot of color pretty early on, and they're just really battling out. And then here and there you see Jimmy Hart popping out from under the ring, getting involved a little bit, and then sliding back under the ring. And he's wearing this like bodysuit, these long like tights. It's pretty funny.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah, it's great. But I love the brutality of this match. I love the intensity of it. And with it being no DQ, it's kind of funny that, you know, still Jimmy Hart playing up that chicken shit heel would hide and find his opportune time to come in and get involved,
right,
which he does. You know, he brings in a chair, which, kind of backfires at one point, but, you know, Terry gets a hold of that chair. And since there's no DQ, like, let's have at it. And they take some amazing chair shots, especially to the legs, both of these guys, you know, so
on a chair that is solid steel.
Solid steel. Yeah. It's like those old arena, those red metal chairs that, you know, I think they were pretty heavy.
Yeah.
You know, they were not kind of like a lot of the chairs you see in pro wrestling shows today with the plastic seats and the tubing. These were like red steel,
the padding, I think, right
maybe a little bit of seat cushion, possibly.
Oh.
Just vicious. This whole match is just vicious. And, you know, Terry gets opened up by getting a head slammed into the ring bell. He then gives Lawler some pretty wicked fisticuffs that opens Lawler up.
Yeah.
So they're both bleeding at this point. But yeah, I just love the brutality of it. I love that it went all over the, you know, the outside of the ring. But you know, there wasn't any kind of showboating, you know, like they were really focused on just beating the tar out of each other. And
yeah.
And the crowd is really what adds so much to the magic of this match, because that's one thing I absolutely love about the Memphis territory was that they truly believed what they were seeing. And if you were an outsider coming in to rough up their favorite son, their baby face, mostly Jerry Lawler, he did have some heel periods throughout, but not in this case. Then they were all over him. You know, they were all over Terry, everything that he did. And he didn't have to heel up and play to the crowd so much like he would. But I think the thing that I love about watching Terry work is his selling. I think his selling is something that it's, I don't want to say goofy, but
yeah,
tell that he's not above kind of making himself look foolish, nope. You know? And there's this spot, early in the match when they go out, and this is before, you know, the metal guardrails, they would just have kind of, I think it was probably like a coffee can with cement in it and a post. And then there was like a rope.
Yeah. String. I wrote string.
Yeah. The string, you know? And so rope, they knock all that stuff down. And then there's this point when Terry gets back into the ring, but somehow he had been able to hook his foot on the rope and he trips, and the crowd just loves it, just eats it up, yep. You know, and it's just awesome. It is a brutal match. He does eventually get the Texas spinning toe hold on Lawler a few times because he had taken the chair to his leg. And he's just, you know, he's not just trying to beat Lawler. Like, he's trying to hurt him for good.
Yeah.
You know? And that's one of the things that I really enjoyed about this match, which, you know, Lawler eventually, you know, Terry goes for the big chair shot and on the ground and, or on the mat, and Jerry moves out of the way. And then he eventually gets a punch in on Terry, gets the chair and just starts wailing on him, on his leg, eventually knocks him out of the ring. And just keeps wailing on him, and wins pretty much by a count out, you know, which I thought was kind of funny.
It was surprising. But, I was surprised.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's so believable, yes. Right? Because you're thinking, if this guy's taken several big shots to the leg on the outside over and over and over again, he probably shouldn't stand back up,
right?
And make it back in, you know what I mean? Especially if he's the chicken shit heel, you know? And so that was just, I enjoyed that. I didn't think it needed so much of a three count in this case, because then you still kind of open up the door, right? Which is what they did. And so that kind of segues us into where this continued on. So you have the amazing Lance Russell doing commentary. You got the fans of Memphis just making it just a buildup of just the atmosphere. Must have just been, you know, I can't imagine how hot it must have been in the Mid-South Coliseum in March of Memphis.
Yeah.
I mean, especially with, you know, I think it was close to 9,000 fans in this particular case. So that leads us to this promo that Lance Russell actually was conducting with Jerry Lawler, where he said, let's take a look at this footage of an interview I just did with Terry just recently at the Channel 5 studios, which is where they would do a lot of their in-studio shows. And Terry is cutting an amazing promo, but intimidating, and calling out Lawler in what I believe was the first. He challenged him to an empty arena match, right? And it's because he was calling him out, saying he was a coward, saying that it was, he had everyone in his back pocket. He had the Memphis police in his back pocket. He had Lance Russell in his back pocket. He had the people of Memphis in his back pocket. But he was a coward. What was your favorite line of this promo?
He goes, "You son of a jackass! You're a lover of chickens." I'm like, "Whoa! This is gold." I'm gonna put some of this on the episode for sure.
Oh, I love it! I love it.
UA World Heavyweight Champion Terry Funk has something that he wants to explain about, and we are obliging him with that time.
First of all, I'd like to say that Jerry Lawler is a son of a jackass. He's a lover of chickens. He has a one-track mind the same way a hog does at supper time or slop time, but he's not concerned about slop. I want to tell you, Lance, what he's concerned about. The man is concerned about money and money alone. And I'm going to prove to you, Lance, that he doesn't have any guts. And you see right here, is I have got a date, I have got a time, and I have got a place. This is a personal invitation sealed right here to Jerry Lawler, and I want to get him down and hold him down, and I want to make him say to me personally, Terry Funk, you are the better man. Terry Funk, oh, Terry Funk, oh, please let me up and let me go. That's what I want to make him holler. I want to see if he's got the guts to come down there. The guts. Like I don't think a lot of people have around here. And I'm talking about the fans, Lance. I'm talking about you. I'm talking about a lot of different people. But Lawler does not have the stinking guts to come down there where no money is involved, where nothing is involved except personal pride. And I do have Texas pride, believe me.
Well, there it is.
Take this.
Okay, I will take it, and I will deliver it to Lawler in there. No money, no fans. He's crying Homer and all that. Well, there's the challenge from Terry Funk to Jerry Lawler, and we'll deliver it to him.
I really love this promo because it's so you really feel the Texan coming out of Terry. You know, not that Memphis is a super sophisticated town; it's very country. Some would say more country than a lot of places in Texas. But you know, Terry being from the Double Cross Ranch. You know, you sit there thinking, well, yeah, he's got lots of experience with livestock and whatnot. So he starts comparing Lawler, to a boar, you know, eating slop and all this stuff, and how he's focused on one thing only, and that's money. You know what I mean? So he calls Lawler out and challenges him to an empty arena match.
Yes.
So that there are no fans, there are no police. He doesn't even want money for this rematch. He just wants Lawler to get on the mic and say, no, I can't take any more. You're the better man, Terry. You're the better man. And that's what I thought was pretty amazing, because then it cuts back to Lawler and Lance Russell's handing him the invitation that Terry told him to deliver to Lawler. And Lawler kind of looks it up and down.
This is great.
He's like, okay, yeah, got it. And he just kind of starts to walk off. And Lance was like, well, I was hoping for an answer. And he's like, you got it. Yeah, well, all right. And it made sense because why would he need to sell a show that wasn't going to have a gate to it?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Good point.
And it added so much intensity to it.
Yep.
Because you kind of started to see the wheels turning in Lawler's head that, like, he was dealing with something different here. You know what I mean? This was something that, even though it was still going to take place in Memphis at the Mid-South Coliseum, he knew that he was kind of going to be more on his own at this point. He wasn't going to have the fans of Memphis behind him. He wasn't going to have the police of Memphis behind him. And that kind of fast forwards as we go nearly a month, just a little over a month later, that no DQ match was on March 23rd. The empty arena match took place on April 25th. And so we're in the Mid-South Coliseum, and it's pretty awesome because we see Lance Russell, and he's sitting there in this empty arena, and he states that there's 11,300 empty seats, and there's the ring, and he's just thinking, you know, like, I don't know that this is going to happen. He keeps mentioning how, you know, it's just about 1 o'clock. Like, that was kind of the agreed upon time. They said they were going to fight. And he ends up just kind of lighting up a cigarette, even just because he thinks, you know, I don't know that this is going to happen. So until somebody shows up and he lights it up indoors, this was still allowed back in the early right. 80s, right? I think they still had smoking on airplanes for sure. I don't know when that stopped.
Yeah. I feel like it stopped in the 90s.
I think it did too.
Which is insane, yeah. Really.
It really is. But he mentions he had cameraman Randy West with him. And it's just Lance Russell, cameraman Randy West, because Funk wanted proof. He wanted it documented, and that way people could see that Lawler's a coward and he's a dog and that Terry is the better man.
You idiot.
Yeah, Terry strolls in and he's sitting there and it's, you know, he's waiting. He's like, where's Lawler? You know, that coward, that coward. And he ends up like, you know what? I'm going to count. And he starts, he does kind of not a quick, but a fairly fast 10 count. And he's like, I win. Because he didn't even show up. He does a little phony 10 count and grants himself the winner. And then slowly in the background, we see the all white Jerry Lawler wearing his all white outfit with his kind of a cloak and his king's crown.
Yes, he's fully.
It's great. Yes. He's in full regalia. And
taking his time, taking in the empty crowd.
He's making sure, you know, like this is it's time to go to war.
Yeah.
And I had read somewhere that Lawler might have regretted wearing all that because he felt not foolish, but that was just more so, you know, for the presentation for the people. But sure enough, he came out dressed in full Jerry Lawler appearance. And it's funny because, you know, I would say the first two, maybe 3 minutes of this match, if you can even call it a match, because there's not even a referee.
No.
Right? It's more like an I quit match, if anything.
Totally. Yeah.
Is, you know, you hear Terry just doing all this commentary.
He's doing the commentary.
Like, there he is. The clown. Look at him. That idiot.
That idiot.
Yeah, you idiot. You coward. Get in here, you coward. Look at him. What a fool. How foolish.
Idiot's a great word, by the way. I love that word.
I love it. Yeah. It's, and that's another thing that I thought was so great about Terry's, I don't want to say character, because it's just like, this is him.
Yeah, it's his persona. Yeah. You know?
It's just him. Is that I can't think of ever hearing a Terry Funk promo or call out where he had to cuss, you know what I mean?
Well, he's swearing right in this, but Lance Russell, it's beeped out. He could probably be saying gibberish.
I mean, you're right. There are beeps, but in terms of like when he's saying, and that's more him when he's like getting himself riled up.
Totally,
and you're right.
Yeah.
When he's like directing it at Lawler, or like when he was in that Channel 5 promo, he's using these Texas insults, yeah. You know what I mean?
You like pig. You said, like,
yeah, you pig, call it, you know, it's like you said, the lover of chickens. You know, I've seen them, you know, sucking on eggs, like all these different things that are just kind of very Texas-y kind of hillbilly hick redneck kind of insults, you know.
By the way, I called in high school, I called a kid a pig once. I'm like, you pig. I couldn't think of anything else, and he goes, what? And I go, oh. Like it's like a bad fart.
You got into his, you got the mind games going, you know what I mean? You got him thinking, so it works.
You're right. But I love that Lance Russell scolds him. He's like, you can't,
for cussing.
Yeah. He's like, watch your language or something like that.
We're going to have to beep, you know, we're going to have to edit these out, cover these up, or yeah, just watch your swearing and everything. And this is just a, kind of a continuation of the no DQ in a way. You know, they start out going all into the chairs, and Terry takes some great bumps and half looks like he trips into a row of chairs and takes them all out and pulls some of the chairs on top of himself. just destroying all the chairs in the front row, which makes sense because nobody's sitting in them.
No,
right?
I mean, who cares?
Who cares? Who cares?
They got blood on him now, but still.
Yeah. And he goes to just, you know, I think one of the things that people remember most of this match is as it gets towards the ending of it, it's on the opposite side of the camera, but we can hear it. And it's Terry kind of destroying the wooden steps
yeah.
that go into the ring. And that's where he gets this infamous wooden spike. It's like, yeah. you know, he breaks off like a shard of the stairs, and it leads up to him trying to impale Lawler, and Lawler sitting there blocking it.
Oh, it's intense. That's intense.
Oh, it's awesome.
Yeah, it's awesome.
It's so good. And Lance Russell's selling it beautifully.
Oh, you know? Yeah.
Like, oh my God, he's trying to stab him with it. We need to stop this. Like, this is getting out of hand and everything. Like, and I think that sells so much because at this time, I don't believe there had ever been an empty arena match.
Not that I know of, yeah.
You know, so you're hearing everything. You're hearing every grunt. You're hearing, you know, every bit of emotion. You're hearing all the trash talk. You're hearing all this stuff. And it had to be as real as it could possibly be, you know, and they sell it as real as it can possibly be. And as far as I'm concerned, it was real. It was real, you know, and sure enough, it gets to that famous ending where Lawler kind of hits Terry's hand and it kind of looks like he ends up kind of stabbing himself in the
yeah.
eye. He's like, my eye! My eye! Oh, you took out my eye! My eye, you know?
It's great.
Get somebody to help me, my eye. My eye. My eye. Where is he? Where is Lawler? Where'd he go? Where is Lawler? My eye. Where is that chicken? Where's that coward? Where's Lawler? He's yellow. Lawler's yellow. He's yellow. Lawler, come back here. You yellow pig! 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 Oh, it's chilling, you know?
It
it's
is.
Chilling. Because he's really selling it, and you're sitting there kind of looking, and you're like, oh my God, did he really poke his eye out? Like, this is really graphic, you know? So I just loved it. I loved the intensity of it. I loved the brutality of it. I loved how personal it was, how personal Terry made it. And, you know, funny enough, there was no Jimmy Hart involvement.
No.
But I don't think Terry would have wanted that, you know, because yeah. he's a tough boy from Double Cross Ranch and he didn't want any outside help. He didn't need any outside help because he wasn't a coward. Like that chicken loving, egg sucking dog, Jerry the King Lawler. So, unfortunately, the vampire stake to the eye didn't allow Terry to continue, and it kind of gave, you know, Lawler the victory here.
Yeah, Lawler literally walked off. He's like, I'm done. He just walks off.
And he leaves. From what I've seen, I don't know that Lawler was as big a fan of the concept of the empty arena match, but who knows? You know, he's one of those ultimate worker types who might have just let that be part of his persona in terms of, you know, if the people of Memphis can't be there with me, then I'm not interested. But, you know, he's also not going to let himself be called out by a wily Texan, and he's certainly going to uphold the honor of Memphis. And he did, you know, he fought and survived everything that Terry threw at him. And it's just, yeah, a real historic match. You know, later on throughout the history of pro wrestling, we would see various attempts at an empty arena match. One that comes to mind more so, I guess, would be kind of more in the Attitude Era with like Mankind and The Rock.
Yeah, that was a Super Bowl. It was a Super Bowl match, wasn't it? Was that
no,
the Undertaker Mankind match?
No. Yeah, this would have been The Rock and Mankind on Raw, I believe. I could be mistaken. Chris will let me know.
Yeah, right. shout out to your buddy Chris.
Yeah, that's right. But just, you know, I highly recommend anybody who hasn't seen Memphis Wrestling to check out Memphis Wrestling, and more specifically to check out at first the No DQ match with Jerry the King Lawler and Terry Funk with that Chicken, which he was called, Jimmy Hart, under the ring, getting involved. But then also this follow-up match of the empty arena match at the Mid-South Coliseum between Terry Funk and Jerry Lawler, which gave us all the wonderful, "Ma, you blinded me, Lawler! You blinded me, my eye!"
And then he follows it up with, "Where is he? Where'd he go? Where is that idiot?" Or whatever he says at the end.
Yeah. And he would have probably kept going, you know, like he just, I don't know that I've met a tougher man in my life than Terry Funk. I mean, he is the real deal, you know? So I thought it was interesting. He's kind of only wearing one of the knee sleeves in the empty arena match, but he's kind of got both of his knee pads on in the no DQ match. But yeah, a lot of the chair shots that Lawler gave him in that no DQ match were to his leg. And so I was wondering if he was kind of just, you know, selling that a little bit more with it or not. You would think you would want your knees more padded in this case. But yeah, never a glamorous wrestler whatsoever. No. Terry Funk was just the epitome of that guy that you didn't want to piss off at the bar.
Yeah.
You know, you would think. And they even announced him, I think, in the no DQ matches, you know, the star of Thunder in Paradise.
Or Paradise Alley. No. Paradise Alley.
Or with, Paradise, yeah, Paradise Alley, Thunder in Paradise. Sorry, Terry.
Wait, not that egg-sucking Hulk Hogan.
But it's awesome, you know, because later on we would see Terry, you know, appearing in Roadhouse.
Over the top.
Over the top. I thought you'd be bigger. You know? Just a real badass. Just an absolute badass.
Well, and if listeners have seen any documentaries about Funk in later on in his life, you guys know he's notorious for having his knees are shot, his legs are in bad shape.
Yeah.
So for all those chair shots that he took that may have been light, or if you think, oh, that chair was plastic or whatever, the chairs back in the day, he was doing some brutal stuff to his legs, and he unfortunately paid the toll for that, but man, right, he sold it so well.
Completely. I think that's one of the funniest little bits in Beyond the Mat.
Yes.
The documentary Beyond the Mat, where he's visiting the doctor's office and they're like, "You need to have completely your knees need to be reconstructed, both of them." He's like, "If I don't do this surgery, will I be able to live comfortably?" He's like, "You shouldn't be living comfortably now."
Now. Like, yeah. For real. Yeah.
You know, so yeah, he's amazing. And my thoughts definitely go out to him as he's dealing with health issues. And Jerry Lawler as well, you know, always had a good rapport with Jerry Lawler.
One hell of an artist too, by the way.
Absolutely. Yeah. His caricature work. It's incredible.
Yeah.
And he's got one of the biggest Coca-Cola collections around, apparently.
Right. I mean,
absolutely. Like Coca-Cola paraphernalia. And
yeah, say what you will about some of those WWE documentaries, because they're not always as factual as we would like them to be or accurate. But the one they do on Jerry Lawler, it's really fun from that perspective, because you see his entire – he's a pop culture fanatic, so he loves all that stuff, right? And you obviously know that better than – most, because you worked alongside him for a number of years.
Yeah, he was great. It was always one of those things that it was hard not to mark out when I was around Jerry the King Lawler.
Well, you mentioned that he didn't start his program with Lawler until the following year. And I think that he launched his program with Kaufman. Yeah. And, you know, I remember the first time I was introduced to Lawler was watching him with Kerry Von Erich when they started kind of like the later years of WCCW, or maybe later year, because I think it was only a couple years later. But, you know, he put wrestling on a whole other platform prior to Hogan in WWF, right? And
completely.
And the fact that both of these guys, Funk and Lawler, went on to continue to wrestle 10, 20, 30, 40 years practically down the road. It's phenomenal. And you know, you were saying from a technical standpoint, the no DQ matches is a slugfest. It's literally just them punching each other. but it's enthralling for those 13 minutes. And then it's, you know, you don't need, it wasn't that kind of a match, right? And so you're not going down the road of like, well, you know, did he get him in an armbar? Where's the armbar? Where's the clothesline? Where's the suplex? Nothing,
right?
You know, but
he does do the atomic drop outside onto Lawler in the no DQ match, does. I believe,
and then he does a pile driver in the empty arena match,
right?
Prior to him doing it to Flair on a table in the late 80s, it's brutal stuff. I'm just like, I was captivated the entire time, and then to cap it all off, you've got Lance Russell, who. Many people probably don't know who Lance Russell is in this day and age. Today's audience probably only when they think of an old school commentator, they think of Jim Ross, and that's fair.
Or Gordon Solie, possibly, if they even know Gordon Solie.
You know? Right, and I mean, we are going to get to us waxing poetic about Gordon Solie down the road, but Lance, man, he was so integral in the storyline, especially in the empty arena match, because he's the only one commentating besides Funk, who's adding his own commentary, who's screaming like at one point like a woman, you know, where he's like, you guys, you have to watch this. The links are in our show notes per usual. You have to watch this. I encourage you to watch both matches and then the promo in between, because when Paul said, here's my match for today, and then a few moments go by and you're like, or maybe a few hours went by and you're like, well, you got to watch this. Oh, and you got to watch this too. And I'm waiting for like a fourth thing. But they really go together. You have to watch all three of these in conjunction, because it really tells the story as to why these guys hate each other so much. And you know, and then you got the little side pockets. I wrote down, I love the studio audience when Lawler gets the message from Funk, right? And he reads it.
Yeah.
It's this like Bozo the Clown at WGN Studios audience. It's so like there's a bunch of kids and they're clapping, like, you know, the producer's trying to get them pumped up. Okay, we're going to commercial. It's so entertaining to see like that piece of nostalgia, because it's now parodied. Right. In so much stuff, right? Like you see it now, like just, I can't describe it the way I want to, but the way Lawler walks off and Lance Russell continues talking to him, like you know, and then they come in from a commercial break and Russell's like having a side conversation. It's like totally, whether that was intentional or not, it's gold. It's absolute gold. It's not polished in a good way.
Absolutely. It's as raw as it can possibly appear, and all that does is make this real.
Yes,
it makes it real. You know, I've always kind of made the joke that, you know, when people mention watching Monday Night Raw, I'm sitting here thinking it's anything but raw. If anything, it's overcooked. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
so overcooked.
Yeah,
Give me this style any day over anything. Give me the rope, you know, dividers from the audience in the ring.
There's literally a piece of string keeping the audience from the wrestlers, where thank God they just punched each other, because they could have really hurt people in the audience, and people did get hurt in the audience.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think they would have loved it too. The fans would have just loved it, you know. Whereas today they'd be like, "I'm going to see you."
yeah, I know.
Right? So cowards.
Come on.
You know.
I mean, guys, and Funk will come up on our show regularly. In fact, my match that I was originally going to pitch for this episode, I'm waiting for the next month. But it features Lawler, or it features Funk. And it's a Funk in the late 80s, and he hasn't changed. It's just gotten better.
Right. Yeah. He's he makes me proud to be a Texan.
As he should. And Lawler, I got to tell you, like you said, Lawler maybe he took issue with the fact that he came to the empty arena in his full regalia. I never had a problem with the crown and cape. I always had a problem with the side singlet. It just never did it for me.
It worked. It worked also to that point where you know, when you have kind of more so later on, another Terry, Hulk Hogan, you know, getting his Hulk up, you know, and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And like the no, no, no. With Lawler, it was always pulling the strap down, you know, and that's when you knew like all bets are off.
And he was doing it before Hogan, by the way.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, you know, Hogan learned a lot from this whole thing. You know, he really that helped develop him. But pulling that strap down, you know, I mean, and later on, you know, much, much later on, we would see Kurt Angle doing it with both straps. Right. Right.
I'm not going to one up you. I'm going to two up you.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I love the one strap. I think it would be bizarre to see Jerry Lawler wearing anything else. I think just because this is pretty much what he's always worn, but I loved that in both cases, he was wearing the all white too, because
I love that.
What better way to show that somebody is bleeding than to wear all white gear.
Right.
Right. So I loved the one strap. I love the pull down. You hear the crowd just erupt because they know their guy is still in it. And if anything, business is really about to pick up. You are going to get some Memphis mud holes stomping in. Courtesy of the King.
And you made a really good point too. You make a really good point earlier when you said, you know, this is being an empty arena match. There's no gate. There's no audience to pay for the tickets to go into the arena. And so much of the money that can be made is from ticket sales, right?
Absolutely.
So absolutely. What's the benefit of this match to Lawler? Is it more of just, it continues the storyline, right? But,
right.
But Lawler,
pride.
Yeah.
Nobody's going to call him out in his own territory, call him a coward, tell him that he loves chickens, compare him to a boar, loving slop, loving money, saying that he has all these assistances with him, all the people helping him, the police helping him, Lance Russell helping him. Even though Lance Russell was there, but he had to document it, you know,
he had to,
it was a matter of pride. It was a matter of pride, you know? And so, he brought it. And he survived and, you know, came out on top. So just absolutely, like you were saying earlier, golden years for me. This is, you know, and I was, you know, this is March to April. By the time the empty arena match took place on the 25th, I was freshly 1 year old.
Yeah, I mean, I was five. I think I was five. Yeah, I was five. No, I was still four.
Oh,
so, yeah, so not even thinking about wrestling.
Right, right. No, I was just crapping my diaper. I think. So
yeah,
who knows?
I had superheroes on my wall that I that was wallpaper, and I was ripping the superheroes off my wall because I thought they were toys. And my mom came in, she's like, "What are you doing?" I was ripping the superheroes off my wall. That's wallpaper.
Do you remember which superheroes were on
it?
There
was like the DC stuff, so we're talking Superman and Flash and Wonder Woman. But then the pocket superheroes came out around that time too. They were the first 3¾ figures, superhero figures. Wow. And they had, if you look at them now, they're hilarious because the Batman and Superman, I think, have their hands right in front of their crotch, the way their arms are bent. And you're like, what's going on there? But I had like a Hulk figure, you know, there's like Mego, I think, might have put these out, like mini Mego figures, you know, and
nice.
Anyways, yeah.
That's great. I mean, that kind of segues into some of the things that I had kind of found out in terms of, you know, toys and cartoons and things that were going on in 1981.
Yeah, tell us. I teed it up perfectly for you.
Yeah, I mean, later on in 81, it seemed like cartoons would get released more so in September of 81, but that's when we saw the debut of Smurfs.
In 81?
Yeah, 81. 81, there was also the Spider-Man cartoon.
Oh, yeah.
There was a Shazam cartoon.
Oh, shout out to our buddy Diallo. He listens to us.
Oh, is he a big Shazam guy?
He loves Shazam. Shazam is like his gold.
Well, hopefully he can look up this old school 1981 cartoon of Shazam.
This is Billy Batson, star reporter for station WIZZ-TV. He has been picked by the aged wizard Shazam to carry on the wizard's lifelong crusade against crime and the forces of evil. When Billy speaks the wizard's name,
Shazam!
Billy becomes Captain Marvel, mighty champion, combining the wisdom of Solomon, the strength of Hercules, the stamina of Atlas, the power of Zeus, the courage of Achilles, and the speed of Mercury. Billy's twin sister, Mary Batson, has also been granted special powers. When she speaks the name
Shazam,
Mary Batson becomes Mary Marvel, blending the grace of Selena with the best qualities of other goddesses, whose names combined form the word Shazam. The third member of the mighty trio is their friend, lame newsboy Freddie Freeman, when he speaks the name of his idol,
Captain Marvel!
Freddie becomes the powerful Captain Marvel Jr. Together, they are the mighty Marvel, dedicated to fighting the forces of evil throughout the universe.
I want to say it ran maybe three seasons. I could be mistaken on that. Awesome. There was another cartoon called Teen Force, which I wasn't familiar with. But one thing that I thought was funny was that there was a Laverne and Shirley in the Army cartoon.
Yes, I think Filmation put it out. Filmation, who did
Hanna-Barbera? Yeah,
was it Hanna-Barbera? Or okay, so yeah, because Filmation, I think, did might have done the Gilligan's Island cartoon that came out for a while, for a minute. Laverne and Shirley in the Army cartoon. Whoa, deep cut.
Yeah, it's a cartoon. It was a spinoff of the popular show, obviously.
Right on.
And Penny Marshall did they did the voices. It's pretty interesting, right? You would think you never really saw a sitcom turned into a cartoon. I mean, you would kind of later on, I think it became a little bit more popular, but
yeah, but still though, that's a good point. Like, you know, Gilligan's Island, I guess, makes sense in a way because there's a lot of dynamics going on there, but Laverne and Shirley is literally about two working class women,
right?
Up
the Milwaukee like brewery or whatever the factory or something, right?
Can you imagine if they made a Three's Company cartoon? That would have been amazing for kids.
I want to find the Laverne and Shirley in the Army. I want to see if Lenny and Squiggy were in there because those are always
they had to have been
my favorite characters. You know, they had to be.
Y'all might not know that Michael McKean, you know, obviously from Better Call Saul and all the Christopher Guest movies and Spinal Tap, clear, obviously, he was on Laverne and Shirley way back when. And Penny Marshall, the director of so many amazing films. So,
yeah, she's great.
Wow, those are some
love Laverne and Shirley. Yeah, I mean, I caught it on reruns, but there was one. It was one of those shows that I really took to. You know, I really enjoyed watching it. And Happy Days, but you know. I liked Laverne and Shirley more.
I think I did too, to be honest with you. I don't know why. I think I like Lenny and Squiggy a lot.
I really did. I loved them, you know? Yeah. And was it Scary Movie where he showed up? Was it Squiggy, I think, showed up as like the principal?
Yes, I think so.
Right? I'm racking my brain now.
Chris going to call you out on that too?
He probably will. Okay. You never know.
Chris is like, you guys mentioned me twice on the show. What? What's going on here?
He's big Sanford and Son guy.
Oh, me too.
Or no, the Jeffersons. That's his big one.
I mean, these are all great shows. So
that's true.
Some might say we're too young to be enjoying these things. We're like, wait, whoa, hold on. You guys are supposed to enjoy stuff that came out in the middle 80s. I'm like, no, there was reruns were hot back in the day.
Oh yeah.
That's where I watched Welcome Back, Kotter. That was my show. That was my jam.
Oh, wow. That's pretty awesome.
I'll save that for if we ever cover, you know, I'll try to come up with a Welcome Back, Kotter link. That way I can drop the drop some lines from Vinny Barbarino.
Well, did you watch Greatest American Hero? Because that was on TV at the time.
Wished I had the figure. They made an action figure for that.
Yeah, the figure, right? Yeah. It was like a 12-inch, I think.
They did, but they also again made like a mini one. I think he had like a plastic cape or not. Or he came, like they made a car. They made him and who was his co-star? The guy from he was on that show with Bill Cosby. Robert Culp.
Oh, I wouldn't have guessed that.
Yeah, Robert Culp and Connie Selica. Oh, gosh. And, of course, Michael Paré. But, yeah, I Spy was that Bill Cosby show.
Did you – so I think The Fall Guy, did you watch The Fall – The Fall Guy?
All that stuff.
Right? That was big on TV. Hill Street Blues was another one.
Fun fact about Hill Street Blues, whenever I would sing and was get – or whenever I was getting winded having to run the mile in high school – that song would get stuck in my head. One more lap. Oh my God. I want to run track.
I'm gonna have to listen to that one again.
It'll get stuck in your head. You're welcome.
I wanted to get stuck. Those are the best songs.
I know, right? They are. In your head.
That's what the theme's supposed to do. It's like sort of a jingle, but way cooler. You know. Well,
speaking of themes, Magnum. I was looking. I always look for themes, the theme songs to the wrestlers that they come out to, right?
Right.
And this was a time when not every wrestler was coming out to a theme song. And I did track that in the really quickly in the Lawler Funk match, the no DQ. Is it Lawler that comes out to the Rocky music?
Yeah. Okay. Lawler. That was his theme song. That was his theme at the time. So
you can hear it in the opening, just a snippet of it. You know, I'm sure Funk, maybe Funk didn't come out to music, but
I didn't hear anything. I could have just been enthralled by the atmosphere of everything I was seeing, but I didn't see anything. And I thought that was a neat thing that they didn't need the music for the empty arena match either. You know, it just added to the seriousness of the occasion, you know, so I thought that was pretty awesome. I did see that the most popular toy in 1981 was still the Rubik's Cube.
Wow. 81. I didn't realize it was that old.
Well, I think it had been designed, I want to say, in like 73 or 74. Okay. But it was still really popular in 81, as was My Pretty Pony.
My Pretty Pony.
Yeah, right?
Is it My Little Pony? Is it My Little Pony that became my...
I think My Pretty Pony was the predecessor.
Wow.
And there was also Monchichi dolls. Yeah, Monchichi. Remember those? Like a little monkey doll type thing?
They had a bunch of holes in their face, and you could stick them in the stick of their thumb in different... Yep.
Yeah, that's right.
I was trying to describe it to my son the other day. I'm like, you know what a Monchichi is? I was like, what's that? And I said, they had like holes in their ears and their mouth. He's like, in their nose? I go, I don't think it was in their nose. I feel like it should have been.
I wonder how much those would go for today. You know, like, I wonder if you're looking on eBay for a Monchichi doll. Like, it's got to be a pretty penny. So many great films came out in 81 also. Between these matches, between the no DQ match and the empty arena match, Michael Mann's Thief would be released in theaters, which was an amazing film. James Caan.
Yeah, if you've never seen Thief, guys, you should. We covered it on $2 Late Fee. You should see it.
Oh, it's
Tangerine
it's so
Dream
good.
Does a soundtrack for it. It's a phenomenal film.
Yeah, Thief is great.
It's a great companion piece to Heat. It's a nice, like, almost prequel to Heat.
It's so true. It's so true. I love all things Michael Mann.
Same.
Except maybe did he do the Miami Vice remake, the movie?
He did. It gets a lot of love now, surprisingly. I didn't dislike it, but it's not.
I'd have to watch it back.
Some people have said that's his best movie. I'm like, have you seen Manhunter? Have you seen Thief?
No, have you seen Heat?
I know Last of the Mohicans has a lot of love for it. Heat is phenomenal. I don't think Miami Vice is his strongest film. I don't dislike it. I'm just...
Yeah, I need to watch it back.
It's got moments.
I just love the series so much that it's like anything other than that.
The series is golden, and they never should have touched it. Crime Story is really good. Crime Story was his... He produced that as well. Talk about a phenomenal cast on Crime Story. If you've never seen Crime Story, highly recommend it. Dennis Farina was the lead actor in that.
Oh, man. Yeah. Always playing a cop or some sort of law enforcement or gangster. Because
he was a legit cop in Chicago. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Sorry.
No, you're fine. I'm just like, I was looking at all these other films that were coming out in 81. I didn't like one of my favorite Tobe Hooper movies that gets widely overlooked, The Fun House.
Oh, Fun House, yeah.
Also came out in 1981.
Wow, that was 81? Wow.
Yeah, 81. Raiders of the Lost Ark would come out in the summer of 81.
Wow.
And they would have the 12-inch Indiana Jones doll.
And he could take his clothes off. I remember that.
Yeah.
My brother was like,
yeah.
Look, you can take his pants off. I'm like, that, okay.
Still had the hat on?
Yeah. No, the hat came off too.
No, your brother had him naked with the hat.
Oh, yeah.
Just the wig.
Of course. Oh, my brother.
Sheena Easton's 9 to 5 came out in 81.
Sheena Easton's 9 to 5?
Yeah, that's what I saw was that she did 9 to 5. Because I was sitting here thinking, like, wouldn't that have been like Dolly Parton or something, right? To go with the movie, but I don't know.
Yeah. Oh, she did 9 to 5. That's the song.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah. Oh,
not
a fan of that.
Working 9 to 5. Yeah. Not to be confused. So
I'm not. Yeah, Sheena Easton. I think she came out of the Prince era. Prince helped her get started. I think.
Yeah, I think you're right. And we can't forget about Vanity, but.
No, I was going to bring her up, but we'll save that for another episode, probably.
Yeah, we'll cover that when we do our Never Too Young to Die.
There you go.
Which I know you all covered as well, didn't you?
We did not.
Oh, one of my absolute favorite films.
Okay, then we'll have to have you on as a guest after your brother comes on, after Jonathan comes on.
Yeah, I used to sing that theme song to The Ring.
You did?
Never Too Young to Die.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing.
And then after, I felt like, I've got like a bunch of children following me to The Ring. Like I'm the Pied Piper and I'm singing, you're never too young. You're never too young to die. And I don't think they understand exactly what we're saying, but they're singing it with me. I thought I should, after COVID, I was like, you know what? I should probably just drop this and change songs.
Pat Benatar's got a song called Hell is for Children. So, you know, it's okay. My son's like, what did she say? I go, yeah, it's real. Anyways. I was going to tee up my match because one of the guys in the featured match, he used to come out to the song In the Air Tonight when he was in AWA.
Oh, wow.
Nikita Koloff.
Also of Miami Vice.
Yes.
Popularity.
Yeah.
I will hand it over to you. I love 1981.
I clearly, and there's a lot to love.
My diapers.
You're like, I loved it 10 years after because I was too young to remember it.
Right. It's so true.
All right. So the year is 1986. I'm going back to 1986. You went to 86 last time. I'm going to 86 this time. I was inspired, really quick side note, Magnum TA, Terry Allen, who was in the business in the mid to early 80s, had a horrible car accident in 1986, I believe, which pretty much ended his career as a full-time wrestler, but he got his name from Andre the Giant. Andre was the one that recommended he call himself Magnum instead of Magnum PI, Magnum TA. And because he said he kind of had that look to him, right? The Tom Selleck look. But
nice.
He's active on social media, and he posted a photo of him and Nikita Koloff. And Nikita Koloff he's from Minnesota, I think, originally. But the guy, took this Russian moniker. He was the nephew of a famed evil bad guy, Ivan Koloff, who wrestled in the AWA. And Crusher Khrushchev was related to them, who went on to become Smash in Demolition. But Nikita Koloff was a beast, and Magnum TA posted a photo of the two of them, like, looking at each other, right?
Really?
To get to this famed feud I'm about to talk about. And it just inspired me. I hadn't watched their match in a while, so I pulled up this match from August 23rd, 1986. for the United States title. It was Magnum TA versus Nikita Koloff. And I thought, this is the match we're going to cover today. Quick backstory about this match. It all started back in July when Magnum put the title on the line against Nikita Koloff, and they have a famous contract signing where Nikita, who's wearing a he's wearing this great white suit with Ivan Koloff, who also has like a white sport coat on. These guys are American, by the way, and, you know, not Russian at all. So they're putting on this accent. It's great. It's like, it's so bad, but it's so bad, it's actually kind of good. It's working. Mm-hmm. And Koloff is, the two of them are together, Ivan and Nikita, and Magnum is there with his mom. Nikita insults Magnum's mom. It's a great little moment where he insults all American women, really.
Magnum, how come all the time now you bring your mother around? You like, how you say in this country, India, you like, maybe these mama boy, maybe got these apron string to you, maybe she's a contract for you. You know, in the Soviet Union, woman, she know her place. And it's no in front of camera. No, Magatia, you bring her today. And now you prove to Nikita that a Russian woman got much more class than stinking American woman.
Gentlemen, gentlemen.
Go, go.
Go.
They should be in the kitchen.
Right? And Russian women know their place. And, you know.
Yeah.
Healing it up, as he should. And Magnum takes offense at this. And they start a battle at the signing. Well, flash forward a couple weeks later, or maybe soon after, Bob Geigel, who's like the quote-unquote president of NWA, strips Magnum TA of the title because he offended, well, he wants to admonish him, basically, and have Magnum apologize. Magnum refuses, hits Bob Geigel in the face. Bob strips him of the belt. Nikita thinks, it's mine now, by right, it should be mine. But no, they order a best of seven series to start at the Great American Bash, July 1st, 1986. And the winner of that best of seven series will become the new U.S. champion. So this was, I believe, the final match of the series. This was going to be match seven.
This match will decide the United States heavyweight champion. Fans, introducing first of all, in the corner to my left, from the Soviet Union, 137 kilos, accompanied by Ivan Koloff, the Russian nightmare, Nikita Koloff.
And it was live on TV. Tony Schiavone and David Crockett were on commentary. Tony Schiavone was doing double duty. He was the ring announcer and doing the commentary with David Crockett. David Crockett being the brother of Jim Crockett Jr., who ran Jim Crockett Promotions and this the territory they were a part of. The match starts out with Tommy Young being the referee. My personal favorite referee of all time. I feel like Tommy Young could sell it like no other. So brilliant. And you've got Magnum TA, who's kind of representing America, and Nikita Koloff, who's representing Russia, head-to-head in this match, and they beat the holy hell out of each other for the better part of 15 minutes. I think it's maybe a 14 or 15-minute match. In my opinion, it's a textbook example of what two big dudes can do in the ring without having to do too much, like, crazy stuff. They're not putting their bodies on the line per se, but you know, at one point there's just a lot of physical hitting and clotheslines and just it just looks intense through the whole thing, you know, a lot of hard hits off the turnbuckle, so that's probably doing a number on their backs. In fact, Magnum, you know, he broke his neck, I think, in that car crash, and later on in the year. But up until that point, I'm like, this guy was taking brutal hits all the time to his back and his neck. I'm surprised he didn't injure it sooner, really.
Right.
But Koloff, Nikita Koloff, it was just a total badass, but he's a heel and he cheats. And at one point, Ivan Koloff gets involved. Ivan Koloff's at ringside. He gets involved, which causes Magnum to get distracted. But Magnum is able to overcome Ivan. And then Crusher Khrushchev comes out and interfere in the match as well. But Magnum's overcoming the odds. And the crowd is so hot for this match. It is, you talk about crowd, the importance of a hot crowd. And right. this crowd sells this match like no other, because if the crowd was dead for it, it wouldn't have the same impact. And I mean, sometimes the crowd's so loud, you can barely hear the commentators talking.
Right.
It's so Ivan Koloff eventually, at one point, Ivan Koloff like pulls Magnum out of the ring by his mullet, which is amazing.
Yeah.
And then Magnum pile drives Ivan on the concrete floor, another concrete pile driver.
Right.
You know, flashing forward, I think, other organizations would sell that as being even more dangerous. This happens and the guy continues on later on. I mean, it's dangerous as hell. But like WWF, I think, who's more sanitized and more kid friendly, quote unquote.
Overcooked.
But this is, it's so intense. And obviously, after Magnum pile drives Ivan, he's out of the match. Khrushchev gets involved at that point. There's a melee going on. Khrushchev is battling Magnum, and then Tommy Young gets involved, and Tommy Young gets hit. And I always appreciated how he would get hit, and he would still have enough to recover, you know, early on. Sure. He wasn't totally out of it. But right, in that melee, in that moment, Nikita grabs his chain, his collar that he has, and he hits Magnum with it, and it gets rid of it quickly too, by the way. The way he's able to hit Magnum.
Well, he does the wrap around the arm, right?
Yeah.
He jumps off and does the Russian sickle.
The Russian sickle, which is his signature move. And he gets rid of the evidence as fast as he can, and he pins Magnum for the 1-2-3, and people are shocked. And you hear, I think it's Shivani saying, the Russian nightmare has come true.
And the Russian nightmare has come true.
This feud will continue on the following month for a 2 out of 3 falls match. And I don't want to spoil that, but it doesn't go the way you would expect that one to go either. I chose this match specifically because it feels like Magnum is supposed to win. Magnum's supposed to win. It's supposed to go in his favor, and it doesn't happen, which is something I always love about wrestling, where sure. Suddenly you're like, no, the good guys don't always win right away.
Right.
You got to come back the next week, right? But this is a perfect example, again, of two guys who can just go hard and really sell the moves. Like, they just feel like they're knocking the hell out of each other. And, you know, they continue on this great storyline. Goes in a totally different direction, clearly, because of what happened to Magnum in his car accident. But man, oh man, it is one of my favorite matches of all time. Magnum TA versus Nikita Koloff from August of 86. What are your thoughts on this match?
I loved it. I actually hadn't seen this. And I think I'd caught glimpses of it way back. Not when it happened, but I had seen bits of it. And then when you shared it with me and then sent me the contract signing was awesome. It was an amazing setup.
Yeah.
And so what I really loved about it was the camera work, because it's split down the middle of the table, and Ivan and Nikita are on the left, and Magnum TA and Mama Magnum are on the right. Yeah. And then it gets a nice over the shoulder shot of Magnum signing the contract. Like, he just kind of opens it up and just starts signing it. And then slides it up, and then it gets slid over to Ivan Koloff, who's, on the behalf of Nikita Koloff, really looks at it and really kind of goes over it, you know, to make sure that they're not getting swindled by the Americans.
Yeah, he's mumbling something too. Yeah.
Yeah, and he's like, everything we agreed upon. Yeah, okay. Yeah. And then he slides it over to Nikita to sign. You know what I mean? Like, he wasn't able to interpret it for himself. But one of the things that I thought was interesting was that apparently Magnum TA, his mom thought this was real. Like, he didn't fill her in on the fact that this was a gimmick, like, oh, wow, at all.
Okay.
And so she literally believed it was real. And so when he hops over the table after Mama Magnum's insulted and starts, you know, wailing on him, but then it's kind of like two on one, she's just kind of in shock, and she's just like holding her ears or something, because yeah, she's not wanting to hear the brutality, you know, happening to her son.
Wow.
And he ends up getting, I guess, kind of like a makeshift Russian sickle, which is that big lariat. It's like a high lariat. It looks like it's almost to the jaw.
Yeah.
And he takes the bump on the studio ground, and it was hard to tell, but it looked like he almost landed on the leg of the chair that got knocked over that Ivan Koloff was sitting in.
It did.
So I thought, what an amazing, amazing setup. Like, this is, you know, because now you see like contract signings and they're so silly and they have like podiums, and it just, you know, it looks like a bad debate gone wrong in middle school or something.
Yeah. It's in the ring typically now.
Yeah, yeah. It's just, you know, why does it need to be in the ring? Why does it, you know, so it should be in an office.
Yeah.
Something official, you know. And I thought this was one of the better, if not the best, contract signing I've seen. Because it's legit, you know. It's not like they're fanning through a bunch of pages that are just blank, you know. Like, I mean, everything looks legit. And then that jumping him at the end, because he's upholding the honor of his mom after she was insulted. It's just awesome. It's awesome. So of course you want to see this match even more.
Yeah.
And one of the first things that kind of stood out was there's a spot when Magnum hits Nikita Koloff with the flying cross body.
Yes.
And it's not the like, it's not the like most glamorous crossbody off the ropes. He kind of like lands on him, and I was like, oh, is he going to catch him? And then he kind of takes the tumble, and just from like that kind of delayed hitting him and then kind of going down, the crowd erupts.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's any advantage that that Magnum had, the crowd was there behind him 1,000%.
Because they felt those odds that were against him, the crowd felt that there's like, what's going to happen? There's no way he's going to win this now.
Right. Well, he represented every single one of them, yeah, too, right?
Yep.
Because he shows up, he's not wearing a suit at the contract signing. He's like in jeans, very, I mean, you know, he's like the poster child of the 80s.
Yes.
Right. I mean, from the mustache and the mullet, like all of it, you know, to even like when his ring gear is like the cowboy boots, it's awesome. And so another spot that I really dug was when he ends up drop kicking him in the back.
Yes.
Sending Koloff over the ropes. And I think it's Shivani. They say that it's more so because he got drop kicked in the back and that's what sent him over, as opposed to him deliberately sending him over the top, because that at the time was a disqualification.
Yeah. In the NWA, I think. Yep.
Over the top rope. Yeah. Right. Which I think was a crazy stipulation if you think about it. But, you know, and I'd love to see how that could be, you know, used today. Guys would just do 50 Canadian destroyers and super kicks, but, but imagine really, I think it's just the notion of rules,
yeah,
you know, putting rules and giving the referee the importance that he deserves. Because without it, then why is he even there? You right. know what I mean?
Right.
So, but to have it be, you know, a drop kick to the back, and then, oh, but that caused him to fly over the top rope. So that's like kind of a gray area. It was like, nah, the referee's letting it slide because it's, you know, match seven, this, you know, culminating title match. And so I thought that was really awesome. I loved, like you were saying, I loved the brutality of it. I was amazed at how agile both of these guys were.
I totally, you know, agree. Yep.
Just especially for their size. You know, I'm not completely sure on what their stats were at the time.
I think Magnum was like 245.
what would he have been, like 6'3"?
Yeah.
Six,
I think so. Actually, he's 6'1", 245.
6'1". Oh, wow.
Yeah. And then Koloff was 6'2", 275.
Jesus. And, you know, it's funny. You're mentioning the one strap with Lawler. It was Koloff's outfit that I never liked that kind of outfit. Interesting.
Okay.
Yeah, because I always thought it looked like a woman's bathing suit.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, the one piece. You know what I mean? That really, you can't help but notice his bulge. And, you know, he's got so that to me was.
That's hilarious.
Yeah. You know, whereas if had he just had one strap and he could have looked more like a Tarzan type character. But no, he's got the woman's bathing suit on. So
that's interesting. That
yeah. You know, whereas like Lawler at least had the leg tights and the one suit, you know, the one over it and the trunks. So Lawler's was actually kind of more of a three piece.
Yes.
If you think about it, right? Because it's like the long tights, the Tarzan outfit on it, and then the trunks over that, you know. So
it's true. It's true.
Yeah. I loved this match. I loved now I was watching it and I was a little confused at the end because I thought it was okay, so Ivan Koloff gets the pile driver on the outside, right? He pulls Magnum out by the mullet, which Tommy Young kind of starts to see and then really kind of turns.
Yeah, he avoids
really
that.
Quickly. Yeah, which I thought was great. Like, really wonderfully creative avoidance there, yeah. Right? Because I'm sitting there thinking, like, he's doing this right in front of Tommy Young. He's pulling him out by his mullet. Might have pulled him out by his mustache. I can't tell, but he's getting involved. And the crowd's just like, come on. And then he takes the pile driver. So Ivan takes the pile driver on the concrete, right? I was confused in thinking that it was Ivan that hopped back up. But then it's like at the end of the match, you see the three bald bad guys. All, and I'm like, wait, where did he come from? So now that makes sense that it was
Khrushchev. Yep.
Because at first I was getting a little incensed where I was like, he just took a pile driver on the concrete.
How did he recover?
Or like, how is he up and distracting him now?
Right.
A minute later, you know, but it's Khrushchev. Okay. So, and I thought that was a great use. Tommy Young getting, it wasn't so much that he took a bump, but he was in between them.
Yes.
And ropes. So it's more like Khrushchev distracted, got Magnum's attention, and Tommy Young got in between them, which allowed Koloff to get the chain. And I thought that was funny too, because he hoists himself up in the corner, and you were thinking, oh my god, he's gonna do like the Russian sickle off the ropes, and he kind of does, but he kind of more so just jumps down to his feet and then does
and then
it.
Does it? Yeah.
So you can feel like, oh, that had some extra sauce on it, you know, like that had momentum on it, but it looks like he catches him across the face.
Yeah,
which I thought was awesome, you know, like, and I thought that's it, like this is the finish, and it was, and I thought brilliant finish, perfect timing, great booking.
Yeah, I think Dusty was the booker at that time, Dusty Rhodes,
and he's always been credited as one of the greatest bookers ever.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, he's a lot of, like, most of his storylines have always been just people. Yeah, he's great. So I thought that was awesome. I wasn't familiar with them doing a 2 out of 3 soon after, which I think is slightly anticlimactic.
Yeah, you know? I think they should have probably ended it at this point.
Yeah, well, or just had a maybe a no holds barred rematch.
There you go.
No outside, you know, or possibly a cage.
Yeah.
Right. So there couldn't be outside interference. I don't know. But it seems like if you're going, you know, I think because I'm thinking also like NBA playoffs are going on right now. And it's like, who wants to watch 7 games in an opening round?
Right.
You know, but in this case, it's awesome. Now we're in game 7. And oh, the damn Russians, they won. I was like, well, we'll do a 2 out of 3 to kind of make up.
yeah, so, right.
You know what I mean? So that's kind of weird.
Well, and Magnum had come off the heels of feuding with Tully Blanchard not too long before this. So, you know, he still had the scars from those cage match he had with Tully, where they're beating the holy hell out of each other. So he went from Tully, and if you heard our last episode, you heard Paul's funny take on Tully way back when.
Stepped out of his territory.
Right, yeah. And then you go into Nikita, who is just a beast. You know, at one point he's got Magnum in a bear hug, and that looks brutal, you know?
I love that too, because, thank you, you reminded me. What I really absolutely love about this atmosphere, the tone, the style, everything that was this match that added to it being real, was the drop of the arms, right? So when you're thinking crappy Vince, WWE, whatever, WWF, it's like, you know, holding it up, drop. It's like one, right. And then it's like two, and then it's like it's so stretched out.
Yes.
Whereas here, it's like,
yeah,
and it just that the speed of that just added so much to this. So when he has him in that bear hug, and it might be the third, or it might be the second arm attempt. Because I think he had him in a hold earlier, and they did that. And I was just like, oh my God, like that's how the arm drop should be done, because it's legit. You know, you're not stretching this thing out where it's just like hokey and obvious.
Right.
You know, it's similar in my estimate, like how I see it, to like when there's a ladder match and the guy does like the slow climb all of a sudden. Just, you know, it's like, wait a minute, like what?
Yeah, like his body's cramping up or something.
Yeah, but then at other times he's like climbing like quickly, and it's like, why isn't he climbing quickly? Like,
right.
I don't know, but I loved that. I loved it. It was just like, no, because then it's like, oh God, like it just adds so much suspense. And then he's fighting, and he's letting the crowd get in, you know, get behind him, and then he slides his arm in between, and then hits him with this big hip toss, and it's like gave everything he had. It's beautiful. The selling and the execution here they're great.
Yeah.
It's great. Like this is an all-time great match. And I wish more modern day wrestlers would do themselves a favor and watch every episode of Territory Marks that we've done. This is our second one, but that we will continue to do.
We're just getting started. Yeah.
This is the real deal. This is how it should be. This is how it can be.
Yep.
And everyone believes this. Everyone believes this, from the wrestlers to the referee to the commentators to especially the audience. Everyone believes it. And it's not overly set up. It's not a bunch of spots. It's not the thing that I love about what we've spoken about today and what we do cover here is that for the most part, what we are seeing are fights that you could see in public. You could see this taking place in a bar, right? You could see this happening in a bar. It's what kind of lends itself to that famous fight from They Live.
I was just thinking that. Yep.
I mean, it is, right? Yep. Because from what I understand, that fight was supposed to go 20 seconds, I think, on film. Yep. But then as Roddy Piper and Jeff Immada started putting it together, like it ballooned to like 6.5 minutes, I think.
Yep, something like that.
And I think the biggest pro wrestling move is like the backdrop, right?
Yeah.
That he gives Frank onto the concrete in the alley. But it's just a lot of punches and brawling, and especially with them selling it right after that scene, which is one of my favorite parts.
Same.
Right. Because it's like, they just destroyed each other.
Yeah.
And like, I want to see that. I don't want to see them just kind of like, okay, like we're good now.
Right.
You see the destruction. So with what we're seeing in these matches, and especially with the guys the size of Koloff and Magnum TA,
yeah,
going back to their agility, they're not doing anything crazy, but they're big guys. And, you know, like even just seeing the double axe handle off the top from Magnum TA, like the crowd erupts.
That double axe handle, know? I erupted when I saw that. I was awesome. I was watching this match on a plane ride and just started yelling. I was like, sorry, I'm on the plane.
Right.
Because it was
right,
so exciting. Right. Like, yeah, he's going to get him. Because I forgot the outcome of this match. And then you see what happens at the end. And people are throwing things in the ring. They are so angry. Legit. Right. And I'm sure Nikita, you know, I'm sure it would be great to get his perspective on what happened there. Because, you know, like leaving that match, I'm wondering, you know, talk about, you know, Piper talks about getting death threats back in the day. And Nelson Scott Simpson is his given name, Nikita Koloff. But I would love to have seen, you know, like what the aftermath was with that audience, because, you know, they were just like livid. And the energy of that, you know, when your favorite team loses a game back in the day before we figured out coping skills for rage, you know, the 80s was just full of rage. And so, you know, these people in the crowd just walking home empty handed and sad that their true hero, Magnum TA, Terry Allen, you know, didn't get the job done, got screwed.
Right. Oh, there definitely had to be security to get the heels out of that building, you know,
had to be.
And I wasn't sure if I'd mentioned it on our previous episode, but I always think back to the story Terry had told me about when he wrestled in Corpus Christi as a big heel and got security to just escort him to his car and couldn't get comfortable, and then ended up discovering that he had a dagger in his back.
Wow.
That as he was going from the ring to the locker room, someone had stuck him. But, you know, he just went straight to the car from the arena because he had so much heat and ended up having a dagger in his back. It was like, holy shit. You know, like, so, you know, that's where it should be. We should get wrestling back to these times.
Let's get back to the, well, really quick before we start to wrap up. And I love that you hit that, by the way, talking about They Live, because, that's exactly how I was feeling watching this match. I'm like, that's the same brutality on concrete.
Right.
I pulled three things from 1986. So just the day before this match came out, I think this was on Saturday, because on Friday, Stand By Me came out in the theaters.
Oh, wow. Wow.
Stand By Me, which, you know, August films, I thought for some reason August was similar to February, where they kind of released not the strongest films because kids are wrapping up their summer. September is when better things come out. They might be on vacation. But Stand By Me is a game-changing childhood favorite.
Absolutely.
1986, 1 month prior to this match, I guess around the time the feud was hot, Metroid was released.
Oh, wow.
Metroid was released for Nintendo. Fan of Metroid?
I loved Metroid. Yeah.
Yeah.
That was a fun one. That was a great game.
Yeah. Actually, it was the same month, August. In Metroid, I remember the big reveal at the end when you found out that the main character was a woman.
It's a woman, right? Yeah.
And all these.
I couldn't believe it.
Yeah. It was, what? What's going on here? It's not supposed to be that way. No, it's
right. I'm amazed they haven't made a Metroid film, especially in today's day and age, or tried to breathe life back into that, you know, especially today.
I feel like it's coming. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's gotta be coming down the pipe. Just because I just think there's too many things right now. You know, Mario movie is hot, and Nintendo hit a gold mine with that. So I think it's coming. It's definitely coming.
Leguizamo's pissed. Yeah.
Yeah, right. And then the last thing from 1986, August of 86, The album Graceland was released by Paul Simon. And so obviously that song, that album is topped by You Can Call Me Al, being one of the greatest music videos of all time, quite possibly one of the most catchiest 80s songs of all time. Just fun, encapsulates everything that we love about the 80s, just lightheartedness and a little bit of, you know, just all that good stuff that we love.
Sure. It was a great year.
It was a great year, 86. And I pulled some stuff from 81, but I'm going to hold it because I'm sure I'm going to cover a match in 81 as well.
I totally went overboard in 81. I was like, this is everything that happened.
Don't blow your load, Gene.
Reagan was almost assassinated.
I know. That was one of the things I was going to bring up. I will just tease this and I'll see if you can figure it out. A major television screen couple had their last appearance on a very famous 80s late 70s, early 80s sitcom. Hmm. And they had a spinoff show, which didn't last very long.
Was one of, was the male partner in the movie Troll?
No.
Okay. Then it's not the couple I thought.
Are you thinking of Sonny Bono or?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking with Sonny and Cher.
I love Troll. No, it was not. I'll save it for later. And then, you know, obviously I'm just teasing it for next month. We've got, in my case, I'm going back to 89. Okay. A couple months after the last 89 match I talked about with Sting and Muta. And it features two of Paul's favorites. Maybe somebody who was mentioned in this episode. We'll find out who that is later.
And I will find my 80s gem very soon. And it might be late 70s. Probably won't be early 90s, but we'll see. We'll see. We'll stay tuned.
I love it. And just housekeeping notes. Guys, if you like the show, and you can go on Apple Podcast and leave us a 5-star review, give us a little rating, whatever you want to do. That would be awesome on Spotify. That would be great too. However you find us on Patreon. Got a lot of good stuff coming up on Patreon. Get exclusives to what is happening in the near future on Patreon, all that good stuff. And you know where to find us on social medias and yada, yada, yada.
Don't be a coward. Don't be an idiot. Don't be a clown. You lovers of chickens.
You chicken lovers.
You chicken lovers. You disgusting swine. You pigs. Do the right thing and give us a like, a subscribe, give us the good rating, sign up on the Patreon, and we'll see you down the road.
Don't be a son of a jackass. Until next time. You're never too young. You're never too young to die. You're never too young. You're never too young to die. Never too young. You're never too young to die. You're never too young. You're never too young to die. Oh, listen, I just wanted to say goodbye and remind you that the good guys always win, even in the 80s.
All right, thanks so much for listening. We really appreciate it.
Don't forget to subscribe and give us a four...
Is it 5-star rating?
Don't forget to subscribe and give us a 5-star rating on iTunes. We'd really... Don't forget to subscribe and leave us a 5-star rating on iTunes. If you listen to us on Spotify, that's great too. And you can find us on the internet. Don't forget to check out our website at $2LateFee.com and follow us on Instagram and Facebook at $2 Late Fee Podcast. We'll see you next time.
We did it.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.